Investors.
Did you know that Australia has one of only two fun fairs heritage listed in the world? Yep, one of them is the Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen. The other is in Sydney on the north side of the Harbour Bridge. Yes, it's Luna Park. And I bet you didn't know that Sydney Luna Park was shipped all the way from its original home in Glenelg in Adelaide. And you also may not know that one of Australia's most prominent artists was obsessed with Luna Park. Well, joining us tonight to talk about the history of Luna Park and her passion for it is collector Nicole Brett. Welcome, Nicole.
Hi, Indira. How are you?
Really, really well. So tell me about this passion with Luna Park. Did it begin for you as a child?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in Newcastle in New South Wales, and we used to go to Sydney for holidays. So when we go over the Sydney Harbour Bridge, I could see Luna Park in the distance and think, yes, that's so exciting. The holiday's about to begin. So I've always loved the place. I think it's really a special place in Sydney and it needs to be protected.
And what's your favourite part of Luna Park?
I think it would have to be Coney Island. I think it's the most authentic part of the 1930s park that's left. I'm much more into the popular culture aspect of the park than I am with the rides. Tom Gleason thought that was really weird when I was on the hard quiz, but, you know, them's the breaks. So I'm interested in the pop culture, and I'm also interested in the social history aspect of the park.
Well, the pop culture part of it, I mean, I think we're all attracted to it. You know, those beautiful aesthetics, they're very nostalgic. The colours, the design, is that what you love about the pop culture part of it?
I do. I like that, but I also like the actual art that's within the park. It's it was done originally by Arthur Barton, who was the first artist in residence in Luna Park. The great thing about Luna Park still today is they still have an artist in residence who's Ashley Taylor. Yeah, so all the art around Luna Park is done by an actual artist.
Right, okay. So that gets updated regularly, does it?
Indeed. And he also restores the original artwork that's around.
Wow, how fabulous. Well, Nicole, take us back to the history of the park. Who started the parks here in Australia, the Luna Parks?
Well, there's two gentlemen that came over from the US, James Dixon and Herman Phillips. They were actually the people who started the Melbourne Park, and they also opened the park in Glenelg.
And which was the first park to be built?
It was the Melbourne Park in 1912.
Okay, and then there was one in Glenelg and Adelaide, and I understand there was also one in Brisbane.
I was looking that up today, actually, because I'm only relatively new to Brisbane. I'm from New South Wales originally. It was actually connected to Cloudlands, which was the dance hall. So it was very short-lived, apparently. It's probably in its 40s. In the 40s, it existed for a very short time. And then the whole Cloudlands complex took over the area. So,
all right. And then I understand the one in Glenelg was actually dismantled and then brought here in Sydney. Now, why did that happen?
Well, it was only in Glenelg for 5 years, and there was problems with local council and people who weren't really excited about a fun fair being in Glenelg. It was quite conservative at the time, and people were saying, it would bring undesirables to the foreshore, so they weren't allowed to open on the Sunday, and more undesirable rides, inverted commas, were closed down on Sunday as well. So it was not a money-making enterprise after that. So they decided, well, it's time to move. We'll move to Sydney.
Yeah, because in Sydney we didn't mind the undesirables.
Well, there was still people who were against it in Sydney as well.
Really?
Yeah, people saying that there were going to be orgies at the park, and it was like it would undermine the moral fabric of Sydney.
And do you know much about why that particular location was selected, where Luna Park is today? Was that the original location?
Well, Herman Phillips actually employed two people, which is David Atkins and Ted Hopkins, to run Glenelg. And Ted Hopkins came to Sydney. David Atkins came to Sydney to look around for a new site. Most of Luna Parks, including like the one in Coney Island, are usually on seaside locations, but David couldn't find any seaside locations. And the location where Luna Park is now was the workshop for the Sydney Harbour Bridge. So and the railway. So it still had railway stuff behind it as late up to the 90s actually. So where Maloney's Corner is now is where the railway workshop used to be. So but it actually was the perfect size for all the rides that came from Glenelg to Sydney. So it was just the right size. Also, the council, the Sydney Harbour Bridge wasn't making enough money because people didn't have many cars in the 30s. So they wanted to get more people over the bridge. So they thought, well, an amusement park would get people over the bridge to make them some more money from to pay back the bridge as well. So
I see.
Yes.
So it must have been quite an endeavour to pack up all those rides in Glenelg and Adelaide and package them and then ship them across to Sydney. How did that happen, Nicole?
Well, Ted Hopkins was a very meticulous man. He labelled all the rides. Like, he was actually originally a mining engineer, so he was very meticulous. So he labelled all the rides with all the numbers and the like and, you know, cross-checked them and then chartered a boat from Adelaide to Sydney to take the rides from and everything else from Adelaide to Sydney. So it took only 3 months for the actual park to be built at its current location because of his meticulous way of being. So
right, and obviously that famous face that we all associate now with the Luna Park, both here and in Melbourne, was that part of the Adelaide Luna Park?
No, Adelaide didn't have a face.
Ah, right. Okay, so where did the idea for the face come from?
Well, it was designed by Rupert Brown, and it's there's an architectural style for funfairs that sort of conglomerates lots of different styles. So the actual towers on Sydney Luna Park is inspired by the Chrysler Building
in
New York. So and the face has changed many times because the current face is the face that was designed by Arthur Barton in the 50s, but there was other faces before that fell into disrepair many times because they were made out of paper mache and chicken wire, so it would see air and stuff, it would just deteriorate. So if you see pictures of the other faces, you'll see that it's evolved over time. So
right, and the face in Melbourne is quite different from the face on the Sydney Luna Park, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I think it's because of the age of the park as well, and it's changed also. It was renovated. I think it was renovated in the 90s. So, but the original, it would go with the style of architecture and design, I think, from the early 1900s or the early 20th century. Mm. So, every place is distinct. So, like the Luna Park in Coney Island, the original one that burnt down in the 40s, didn't have a face either. So, I think the two faces are, it's based on the actual Luna Park is based, the original Luna Park was based on a sci-fi film from the early 20th century called The Trip to the Moon. So, and they had a face in there, in the actual silent picture. So it's
based on that.
Yeah, and Old King Cole as well. The one in Sydney is based on Old King
Cole. Oh, yes, Old King Cole.
Yeah.
And I understand that you think the Melbourne Luna Park face is a little sinister.
I was thinking about that when I
because I agree with you.
It is a lot more sinister. I used to be scared of the Sydney Luna Park face as a child, though. I thought it was going to eat me. But, I don't have an emotional connection with the one in Melbourne, so it's a little bit different. It's more of a observer type thing. I think it's really interesting looking, but it is a little bit more sinister looking.
That's interesting. You said as a child that you were scared of that face. Do a lot of children experience that?
I don't know, but mine was the Martin Sharp face, so I'm a 1970s child, so it was a little bit out there, I think.
Yeah.
As much as I love Martin Sharp's work and I'm as but it was, I don't know, I was very young when I first went there, though, so.
Yes, it was huge impact, wasn't it?
Now, yeah.
And bringing us to Martin Sharp, because he was the actor, the artist I mentioned at the beginning, who was hugely entranced by Luna Park. What started that obsession with for him, Nicole?
I think the best people to ask about that probably would be Peter Kingston as well, because he actually knew him.
Yes.
But Peter Kingston and Martin Sharp both worked at the park as artists in residence, along with Lee Hobbs. So they were employed by Hoppy to spruce the park up a bit because, you know, by the time it got to the 70s, it was looking a little tired. So they were given the task to try to repair some of the its aging. So, and they're all very passionate, these three men and lots of others who were involved with the park were very passionate about the park and were members of the Friends of Luna Park, which actually saved Luna Park.
Yes.
From the developers. So.
Yes. So that happened when? Was that the late 90s?
Oh, no, the late 90s. No, it was from... 1981 was the auction the old Luna Park. So my collection, ideally my collection would be from 1935 to 1981 because that's when things like the River Caves were destroyed and other things like that after 81. And then 1982 onwards were the sort of the problematic years of like... Oh God, I sound like such a kick. But it's Harbourside Amusements periods from 1982 to the early 90s. And they just didn't take care of it. So
no, I think it's fascinating that you have these different periods and different categories for the collection.
Oh, there is, absolutely. Because yeah. There's up to when Hoppy left. So till about 1969 was the heyday period where it was actually things were okay. And then it sort of... It wasn't as good. It wasn't not as good, but it was mismanaged a little bit after that. So, that's my opinion. But if you ask any other Luna Park people as well, they'd probably tell you say the same thing. But
you're listening to ABC Radio, and for our collectors segment tonight, we're talking to Nicole Brett about her Luna Park memorabilia. We've been discussing the history of all the various Luna Parks around Australia, particularly the one in Sydney, and now we can get into the nitty-gritty of your collection, Nicole. Okay. So tell us, what is in your collection?
Well, I have about 500 items.
500?
A lot of them is quite small. It's predominantly ephemera, so... paper things and tickets and posters and things like that. Things that would have been thrown away. Luckily, they're not. Things like Lunas and sort of prizes you could have got and souvenirs. I've been very fortunate. I've been gifted a lot of fantastic things as well. After I was on Hard Quiz, I was gifted a poster from the 1940s promoting a fundraising event for the Lord Mayor's Patriotic War Fund and things like that. Like, that's pretty amazing. Mm. And no one else has that anywhere. And things like a catering uniform from the 70s, which was because I run a Luna Park Facebook group for the history of Luna Park Sydney. Right. And one of the women who's on that group worked at Luna Park on the night of the fire, and she was wearing that uniform and she relayed her stories and stuff to the group.
Wow, how incredible.
Yeah, so it is amazing.
And what's your favourite piece in your collection?
I've got so many. But I think the box of postcards I received also after Hard Quiz that were of all the different amusement parks all over the world. I think it was actually owned by Ted Hopkins, and it has this cards addressed to him from David Atkins talking about he's looking around for different rides and stuff to put in the park. I think it's just such a special thing to be given. And, that's probably my favourite. And there's like, and I've got a Mardi Gras poster from 1986 as well that was in the park, which is... I didn't even know it happened. So that was pretty amazing.
Yes. So you said that a lot of pieces have been gifted, been given to you. Where else do you collect these items?
eBay, mainly. It's been eBay. My partner's an enabler. She looks around for me as well to find different pieces. Yeah, it used to be a lot easier to find things. Now it seems to be there's more of an interest now than there used to be. It's harder to find older things. Probably late 80s, early 90s is there's a lot of those, but less beforehand now, so which is unfortunate.
So, are there a lot of collectors of Luna Park memorabilia like you, Nicole?
Well, there's a lot of people who collect amusement park memorabilia. I'm really specific, but there's another group on Facebook that has amusement park memorabilia and reminiscing, and there's a lot of people on that group. And I know there's a woman in our group that collects the really big stuff. I collect small stuff. I live in a small house, so there's a space.
Issue.
Yes, indeed.
I wanted
But
to
there.
ask you how you display your items.
Most of it's on my wall in the hallway. And I have a 1960s china cabinet my parents used to have that has the vast majority of it. But as a potential archivist, I need to go through and preserve it in better ways than I have been. But it's
I wanted to ask how meticulous you are and whether it's all catalogued.
not yet.
No.
It will be though.
Is that a big job?
It will be, I think. I'm studying my master's in information studies as we speak. So
Oh,
yeah, so
good
I'm
timing.
well, I'm doing a subject of special collections right now. I'm actually writing it, finishing off an essay on that. So which is lucky, I could actually talk about my own special collection in one of the assignments, which is great. But yeah, I need to do that. I need to go through and check things because yeah, eventually I'll probably gift it to one of the cultural institutions like the Powerhouse or something like that eventually.
Yeah, because your collection sounds very significant, Nicole. Does it have a commercial market, Luna Park memorabilia?
No, I'm not sure really. It's some may. Certainly there's always a fight on eBay for things, so I think there is a little bit, but I think it's more sentimental at the moment. So I think if the park closed or something like that, it might become more worth, it might become more valuable, but I don't want that. So
And
but
do you
yeah,
go to Luna Park or other amusement parks regularly?
well, before COVID, we used to go every year. Because my partner and I, the first day we met, we went to Luna Park. So we go every anniversary, but since moving to Brisbane and
COVID.
COVID, yeah, we haven't been to New South Wales for a couple of years, really.
And is there an item you're hankering after?
Oh, there's always items. I'd like a penny arcade machine or something like that, but
Ooh.
they're really hard to find. And there is, I know they exist because I've seen people have them because
Can
they
you
were
just describe
sold.
to us what a penny arcade
You
machine
know,
is?
like a you know, like a games machine. They used to like a Sideshow Alley type thing, you know. Can't really describe. It's like, you know, predates video machines, like
Okay.
video games and things like that. It's more clockwork orientated than things. A lot of them were sold in the 1981 auction. I certainly wasn't old enough to buy anything then. But yeah, I've seen them around, and a lot of them have actually made their way back to the park, which is good.
And how
If
much would an item like that sell for?
oh, a lot,
As in, roughly?
thousands,
Ah, wow.
I think thousands. Yeah,
All right, well, good luck. Good luck with that, Nicole.
I probably wouldn't. It's the Holy Grail type thing. I don't think it'll ever
Yeah.
happen, so that's
Oh,
fine.
you never know. This
Well,
show,
if I
this.
win the lotto tonight, maybe.
Yeah, well, and you know, this show goes out not only across Australia, but obviously around the world through our listening app. So who knows? There may be a gift coming your way. You just never know. You've got to put it out
Maybe.
there.
Well, yeah, I don't know where I'd put it now, though. That's the only
Oh.
problem. We have a very small house,
You'd
so
find space. You'd find
I'm
space
sure I
for the penny
would.
machine. Nicole, thank you. It's been so much fun walking back in time. I mean, everyone, so many people have wonderful memories of Luna Park and growing up and their first excursions and outings and those rides and that wonderful face walking through it. So many delightful memories. So thank you for stirring those memories and sharing your passion for collecting Luna Park memorabilia.
No problem at all. Lovely, lovely to chat to you.
Nicole Brett, a collector of Luna Park memorabilia, and if you collect anything, we'd love to hear from you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.